Good morning again. I mentioned that Mom and Grandma were excited for DJ, and I think Dad and Stepmom are pretty excited for him too, so I just wanted to make that point as well. So I don't know about you, but summers are weird, aren't they? I mean, you kind of get going one route, and then all of a sudden you're going, and maybe that's just me. I feel like I haven't been here at all, and so I'm kind of here on Sunday mornings, but then it feels like I'm at camp or I'm here. Now the point that from now on, the rest of the summer, I'm going to be here. I'm going to stay around. I'm not going to go anywhere. At least that's the hope anyway, but summers are just kind of that way, and I don't know if you've been here or if how much you've participated, but like Steve said, we've been talking about heroes of faith, and again, my mind's just been going so many different ways that I have to keep reminding myself kind of where we're at and what we're doing and where we're moving, and so that's where we're at. We're looking at heroes of faith, and again, my hope and the goal of this whole series was, like Steve mentioned too, is finding these individuals, finding these people that can inspire us, that can lead us, show us by example the things that they've done in their life, and I've tried to balance out, and we will as the next few weeks as well, balance out some of these historic biblical characters. We looked at Peter a couple weeks ago, and the stories that he shared and the things that he accomplished with his personality and different things. Then we also looked at Corrie ten Boom, who, somewhat contemporary, I don't know if 100 years or 70 years is contemporary maybe, but you know, fairly contemporary. We're going to this morning jump back to a biblical story as well, even before Peter, a few hundred years before Peter and Jesus, but then we'll next week, again, somewhat contemporary, 300 years ago is maybe not real contemporary, but we're going to look at a gentleman that I think is just fascinating man. And if you, one of my hopes, and this is just a hope that I have, and you guys can take it for what you want, is that you'll be excited about this, because I've been reading some of these more recent missionary journeys of different people, and we'll look at Jim Elliot in a little bit, George Mueller next week. There's just so many people that have done so many amazing things that we just kind of, we don't know about them unless we take the time to read about them, and so that was part of my hope. If you get excited about reading more, I have several books that I would love to pass on to you. I have a library full of books. I only read about six of them regularly. So you guys, you know, welcome to borrow those kind of things. But again, this morning we're jumping back again, back to about 600 BC in the life of Daniel. And Daniel's story, again, is just amazing to me. One of the things about Daniel that frustrates me is that he doesn't seem to have a flaw, right? He doesn't seem to have anything that he does wrong or falls apart. And that to me does, I don't know, you guys all have flaws, right? Does it frustrate you when you see somebody that's like, they're like perfect, they've got everything together and everything? Some of you are nodding. I appreciate that. You know, but because people are flawed and we just don't see that, and maybe that's part of the reason because Daniel wrote the book, he can put what he wants in there maybe too, I don't know. So that's my hope. I'm going to plan and write a book, and I'm just going to put all the highlights. It'll be a really short book. Anyway, no. Daniel just, like I said, he's just, but he's frustrating, but he's so fascinating, too, the things that he's accomplishing and doing. And in 605 B.C., Babylon comes in, and Daniel's from Judah, which is the last of God's people. Israel's already gone. Judah, the southern kingdom, is kind of on its last legs, and Babylon comes in, conquers their holy city, Jerusalem, and they start deporting people, which is kind of what they did. They actually kind of shuffle. It was like shuffling a deck. So they would take some people from this country and move them to this country. They would take some people from this country and move them over to this country. And I think there were different reasons why they did that, but it was kind of like shuffling a deck. These people moved around, the culture kind of changes, and all these different kinds of things. And so around 605 to about 587 BC, there are three different times where people, people from Judah are taken to Babylon and moved around. And amongst those people was Daniel. And why they took Daniel and some of his friends, you'll know, most of you will know Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, which aren't their original names, those are their Babylonian names. It's interesting, again, why Daniel, we know Daniel, not by his, we know him by his old name, not by his new name, whereas the other three we know by their new name. Anyway, it's just one of those things that I ponder and sit in my office and just sit and think about for hours on end. So, but you know, they're brought over, and these are the best and the brightest. Daniel and his friends are the best and the brightest, and they are brought in as part of a training. And I think there was a couple reasons why they did it this way. They train these individuals to fall in line and to be able to kind of be, the word succumb comes, but they're kind of oppressed almost so that they become a part of this new culture, or this Babylonian culture. And so they bring in these best and the brightest for 3 years. They train and educate them, really challenging their culture, their worship, their behavior, and really trying to get them on this narrow path. And the reason, again, there's probably several reasons why they do it, but ultimately they're learning about these gods, Babylonian gods. They're learning a new language. They're getting new names. We saw that Daniel becomes Belteshazzar, and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are not their real original names. And so they're given new names. They're just challenged in so many ways, their whole culture. And they're about 15 to 20 probably at this time. And so their whole world is kind of being challenged. And so what ended up happening is that they have a choice to make. And I think that's kind of where we can fall in line. We kind of have a choice to make. When culture comes up against us, when things tell us this is the way it should be versus this is the way everyone else is doing it, or this is the way God asks us to go, or this is the line that would make us be closer to Him or do different things, we have to make a decision. And that's really where Daniel and his friends are at. They have to decide, are they going to buy into this culture, or are they going to draw a line and say, we can do this, but we can't do that? And that's where we find in the beginning of Daniel chapter 1. And we're going to look at three stories from Daniel quick this morning and kind of tie it all together. But what we see right away from Daniel is that he draws a line. And it's not a line because he apparently doesn't care about his name being changed, doesn't care about learning about these gods, doesn't care about learning this language. You know, he'll do all of those things. But where he draws a line is food. Okay, and in verse 8 of chapter 1, it says, Daniel resolved that he would not defile himself with the king's food or with the wine that he drank. Therefore, he asked the chief of the eunuchs to allow him not to defile himself. And so the line is food. And for me, maybe that's the line too. I just love food, so I'm going to have my certain kind of food, right? For a lot of us. And he draws that line with food and says, I can't eat this food. I can do all this other stuff, but I'm not going to eat this food. And he says defile himself. And the reason why food was the big deal was because of what it meant for the people at that time. And if you think food's important for you, and it's important for me, I think food's very important. But it was so much more important in that culture because their food was tied to their worship. It was tied to their sacrifice to their gods. And so what they would do is they would incorporate all of this worship for their gods and everything, and they would, when they'd eat the food, it was a part of their worship. It's similar to, I think, what we do with when we take the Lord's Supper and have communion, right? It's not just a cup, and it's not just a piece of a bread. It's worship. It's how we relate to Him and connect with Him. And so it would have been similar for them, and that's why Daniel draws the line. This isn't a vegan thing. If your vegan friends kind of tub to you and say, this is why you should be vegan, it's because Daniel was. That's not the whole thing. It's not about vegetarians. He asked for just vegetables and water, but it's more of a worship thing and how that ties into the different areas of worship. And so here's what he does. He asks this guy in charge, and he says, okay, we're just going to eat vegetables. Can we make a deal? Let's just eat vegetables and drink water for 10 days and see how we stack up. And so for this 10 days, he decides, okay, we'll do this, because the guy in charge was a little afraid too. If things didn't work out, he was the one that was getting in trouble. And so this is after 10 days, this is what verse 15 says. At the end of those 10 days, it was seen that they, Daniel and his friends, were better in appearance and fatter in flesh than all of the youths who ate the king's food. And I read that and I think, you know, we've got a lot of neat, you know, lose 10 pounds in 10 days kind of pills and different things that we have on TV and stuff. But if someone's going to eat vegetables for 10 days, I don't know that would there be a noticeable difference? Maybe you guys have done this. Would there be a noticeable difference in someone that just ate vegetables and water for 10 days versus someone who ate whatever else? I mean, to me, that wouldn't be a noticeable difference. And maybe I'm wrong with this, but I think that there was a supernatural thing happening here, that God blessed Daniel because of his faith, Daniel and his friends because of his faith. And so just eating vegetables was able to do something. It wasn't just a biological thing. It was God interacting with their bodies. It reminded me of Popeye. Can I use that as a reference? You guys know who Popeye is? You know, where the spinach. Did anybody eat more spinach because of Popeye's cartoon? Anybody? No? Okay. So that didn't work very well. Their gimmick didn't work very well, I don't think. But, you know, it's that idea where the vegetables, everything, and God worked in their life to be able to make them stronger, to make them healthier. And then ultimately they said that everybody ended up participating in that. But the thing is about this story, about this interaction, there are a couple of things that I think are just so important. The main thing is that Daniel was committed to worshiping only God. Right, he was walking with the Lord. That was his main focus. The second thing that I think was so cool is that he didn't demand. Right, He didn't say, we are not going to eat that food. He didn't pick up the food and throw it across the room or throw this big tantrum or, you know, big fit kind of a thing, right? He wasn't, he didn't whine and complain about it. He didn't just hang out in his room and avoid food or anything like that. He asked to do something different. I think even one translation says, please, can we do something different? And so there's that request and that that desire to do it in that way and seeking a peaceful attitude. Next story we read is in Daniel chapter 2. And if you've got your Bibles, I'm going to read a fair amount of Daniel chapter 2. So it will be on the screen too. But in Daniel chapter 2, we've got another story. And again, you may know a lot of these stories. You may have heard them before, but hopefully we can pull something kind of unique out of them. But in Daniel chapter 2, King Nebuchadnezzar has been the king for a while, or this is kind of his second year, I guess it says. And so Daniel's under Nebuchadnezzar to begin with. He'll have different kings that he kind of is under over the years. But Nebuchadnezzar is the king at this time. And he has a dream, and this is what happens in verse 1 of chapter 2. In the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams. His spirit was troubled, and his sleep left him. Then the king commanded that the magicians, the enchanters, the sorcerers, the Chaldeans be summoned to tell the king his dream so that he came in. So they came in and stood before the king. Okay, and so he says, I had this dream. I'm bringing all these people that are going to tell me about it. What is this dream all about? And actually what he's saying is, tell me what the dream is, and then tell me what it means. Okay, so if someone comes and tells you, what am I dreaming, and then asks you to, you could kind of make anything up probably at that point, maybe, I don't know. But that's what his request is. But this is their response in verse 10. The Chaldeans go to him, and they say, there's not a man on earth who can meet the king's demands, for no great and powerful king has asked such a thing of any magician or enchanter or Chaldean. And so he says, we just can't do that, right? That's just not possible. We can't tell you what you dreamed and then tell you what it means. That's not possible. And the king has a short temper, and he says, verse 12 says, because of this, the king was angry and very furious, and he commanded that all the wise men of Babylon be destroyed. So he's, you know, you can't tell me what my dream is, you can't tell me what it means, we're just going to kill you all. You're just going to be done with you and move on, kind of a thing. And a little bit of a short fuse, a little bit of a maybe a power, flexing your power a little bit maybe too. But in verse 16, 17 and 18, Daniel has to respond to this because he's a part of that. Him and his friends are going to be a part of this group that's going to be killed because they can't interpret in this dream. And so in verses 17 and 18, this is what Daniel does. He went to his house, and he made the matter known to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, which are Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, his companions. And he told them to seek mercy from the God of heaven concerning this mystery, so that Daniel and his companions might not be destroyed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. And so we see, again, just an amazing response, right? What are Daniel's options here, right? He could run away, maybe. He'd probably get killed if he tried to run away. He could start an uprising, right? But he might get killed in an uprising. He could just go with it and just say, okay, maybe it'll be okay, and I'll just, you know, we'll work it out kind of a thing as it goes. You know, he's got different answers, different options, but his go-to response is, let's seek God. Let's find out his mercy. I don't know about you, but a lot of times I try to solve my problems on my own. I look at my situation, I look at my circumstances, I say, oh, I got this. I can handle this. We're going to do this. Well, that doesn't work. I'm going to do this. Okay, that doesn't work. I'm going to do this. I go about 10 times. I don't know about you, but I got about 10 things, good ideas, before I say, okay, maybe I should just go talk to God and see what he has to say, right? You guys don't do that, though, right? Maybe you do one thing and then you go to God. That's my assumption. But, you know, I have so many things and I got these ideas and I blame my dad because he's got ideas. We go at it a different ways. But, you know, I've got all these ideas, and I say, you know, we can fix this. But Daniel says, no, we're just seek God's mercy. We're going to seek God's mercy. We're going to seek God's mercy. And that's what him and his friends do, and God blesses that. We see God giving Daniel a vision of what the king has seen, and the king, or Daniel, seeks an audience with the king, and this is what he tells him in verse 27 and 28. He says, no wise man, enchanter, magician, or astrologer can show the king the mystery that the king has asked. And I think if he stopped there, the king would have been just out of his mind with rage and said, okay, I'm not even going to wait. You guys are just going to be killed. Okay, he says, Daniel's saying, no wise men, enchanter, or magician, they can't do that for the king. But he says, there is a God in heaven. There is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries. and he has made known to King Nebuchadnezzar what will be in the latter days. And I'm not going to take the time to interpret and explain to you all these visions. Don't tell my wife this, but I miss school because I miss the homework, okay? She's so nervous that I'm going to start taking classes at this point in time when we have the five kids and everything else. I know it stresses her out a little bit, that because like I said, I just miss it. And I just would love to take a class or two. And just, if you guys want to give me homework, maybe I'll feel better that way. You know, say, you should do this, you should do this. But make sure you grade it. You'll have to. I have to get a grade because that's an important part of that process. But no, if for homework, just if you guys are interested at all, this is a fascinating prophecy. Daniel's got a lot of prophecy in the end of his book, which we won't look at. But this is a neat one because it falls in line with history. The stuff that happens, the stuff that he's explaining to Nebuchadnezzar, falls in line with the historical account as well. And so I think it's fascinating. The rest of Daniel 2 kind of covers that. So I encourage you to do that. But this morning, the point again, looking at Daniel, looking at his reaction and the things that he chose to do and the way things fell. And because he was able to explain to King Nebuchadnezzar what he had seen and what was going to happen, they're spared. And their lives are free, along with all the other, you know, other sorcerers and magicians and different other people as well. Which brings us to the last story, the story that we read for the children's story, the story that even if you didn't know the other two, you probably know this one, is in Daniel chapter 6. And I'm just going to summarize it again like the children's story was. There was the hostility between Daniel and the leaders, the other leaders, because of his relationship with King. And again, it's been King Nebuchadnezzar, now it's King Darius, there's a lot of political things there that I won't go into, but King Darius is now the king of Babylon or that area, and there's that hostility between Daniel and the rest of those leaders. And again, they try to trap him, they try to figure out a way, what can we do to get them to eliminate Daniel? And again, it's not just removing him, right? It's not just getting him thrown in prison, it's not just getting him beaten. It's not just getting him deported or something like that. It is eliminating him, right? And so it's kind of this extreme response. And so this is what it says in verse 6 and 7 of Daniel chapter 6. It says, "Then the high officials and the satraps came by agreement to the king and said to him, 'O King Darius, live forever. All the high officials of the kingdom, the prefects and the satraps, the counselors, the governors, they have all agreed that the king should establish an ordinance and enforce an injunction, that whoever makes a petition to any god or man for 30 days, except to you, O king, shall be cast into the den of the lions.'" And I don't know, again, why they go, you know, they just want him gone. They say the den of lions. And I think there's a humanness to Darius that says, yeah, we haven't used the den of lions for a while, right? That'd be cool. Let's throw him in there. Let's do it that way. I think there's just that humanness, that excitement for, I don't know, right? That's why the Colosseum was so, you know, big, where they sent people out against animals all the time and stuff. I think King Darius gets excited about that. And, you know, the little pride, you know. Yeah, everybody should pray to me. That's right. I think that's a good law. We should just pray to me. And so King Darius, I think, falls into a little bit of that trap. But then, obviously, the trap for Daniel has been set as well. And one of the things, when I was reading the story to the kids, too, is Daniel in that book looks like he's maybe in his 20s or 30s or something. But at this time in the story, and I don't know if this changes the story, it kind of changes my mentality towards it. Daniel's probably about 80. He's been in Babylon for about 60 years. And so to me, it just kind of changes the mentality. You know, if you think someone's being thrown to the lion's den, and instead of him being 20, he's 80. I mean, I think that changes my mind. I don't know. Maybe that's ageist. I don't know. I don't know if that's wrong, maybe. But, you know, I think it just changes the mentality of the story just a little bit. And so he's 80, about 80 years old when the king signs this agreement. And in verses 9 and 10, we see Daniel's response to that. It says, "The king signed the document and the injunction. And when Daniel knew that the document had been signed, he went to his house, where he had windows in the upper chamber open toward Jerusalem, and he got down on his knees three times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he had done previously." And this is the moment where I just want to grab Daniel by the shoulders and just shake him a little bit, right? What, you know, isn't there a different way of doing that, right? Can't you go and, like, shut the door, go find a closet, you know, go in the basement and, you know, find a different way to pray? I think the prayer is obviously important. It's essential to his faith, to our faith, to our lives. But isn't there a way we can kind of do it in secret, right? I don't know, maybe. And how do they know who he's praying to, right? He must be praying out loud. He must be doing it audibly for them to find out. And so, I don't know. And maybe that's just my humanness in that, too. I just want to shake him a little bit and say, do you want to get in trouble? Do you want to cause yourself problems? I don't know. That's just me, I guess, in some ways. But you have to respect his continued faith, right, and his continuing willingness to pray despite the he knew what was going to happen. He knew the circumstances, but he continued to do it anyway. And so we see, again, he's ready to face the consequences for his actions in verse 13 and 14. We see the trap is sprung. The leaders, the officials, they answered and they said before the king, Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, he pays no attention to you, O king, or the injunction you have signed, but makes his petition three times a day. Then the king heard these words. He was much distressed and set his mind to deliver Daniel. And the king labored till the sun went down to rescue him. And so we just see this special relationship between the king and Daniel, right? Willing to take the time to labor until the sun went down to rescue him, to do whatever he could to get Daniel out of this situation, out of this trap. And so you just see that unique and that special relationship between the two. But despite all of that, despite everything that the king wants to do, there's just nothing he can do. And so he just allows the things to unfold for Daniel. And as things unfold, we see the circumstances where Daniel, we know, is thrown into the lion's den. And so he's thrown in, and in verses 18 through 20, we see some more of the relationship that Daniel and the king have. And we saw it in the children's story as well. But the king went to his palace in verse 18, and he spent the night fasting. No diversions were brought to him, and sleep fled from him. But then at the break of dawn, the king arose and went in haste to the den of lions. And as he came near to the den where Daniel was, he cried out in a tone of anguish. The king declared to Daniel, O Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you continually, who you serve continually, been able to deliver you from the lions? And I just want to make the point, too, and I don't know if anyone's ever made this argument, but these are not tame lions, right? These are not lions that are just, friendly, that are, they hang out at the palace kind of a thing. And these are very hungry lions, too. We'll see in a minute. I'll read that part in just a second. But this is, we're not going to be able to explain this away naturally. There's no way, based upon the story and the context, that this is something that just happened. You know, Daniel, again, being 80 years old, isn't running around the den trying to get away from the lions and fighting them off with a stick or climbing up the walls or, something. Maybe he could at 80. I shouldn't say that. He probably could. But he's not doing that. And it's not just that he gets away with his life, right? It's not that he's, like, everything's torn to shreds. He's got these big cuts on him, but he's alive, just barely holding on to breath. That's not what's happening. We can see that as Daniel comes out, he's not only alive, but he's perfectly unharmed. Not even a scratch, not even a touch, not even a bite mark on him. And it's just this amazing, miraculous event. And I just wish there was a way that I could go back in time and rehear this story so that I would have that awe. Because we lose that awe a little bit, right? Oh, yeah, Daniel, he was in the lion's den. That's not a big deal. You know, everybody goes in lion's dens every day, Not a big deal. No, I want to go back and get that awe back, right? That's such an amazing story that Daniel, he was with lions, right, in a den, stuck in there, and he survived, right? An angel, Daniel says, an angel came and protected me, closed the lion's mouths. And so we see that he's rescued. We see that he's brought forth and brought out. And then we see in verse 23 and 24 some of the king's response, especially and the ramifications that fall to those that trapped or tried to trap Daniel. 23 says, Then the king was exceedingly glad and commanded that that Daniel be taken up out of the lion's den. So Daniel was taken up out of the lion's den, and no kind of harm was found on him because he had trusted in his God. And then the king commanded, and this points out the lion's nature, the king commanded that those men who had maliciously accused Daniel were brought forth and cast into the lion's den, their children and their wives, and they were brought, and before they reached the bottom of the lion's den, the lions overpowered them and broke their bones in pieces. That's a little graphic, but I thought it was worth sharing. Like I said, these aren't tame lions. These are lions that are hungry and ferocious. It wasn't natural that Daniel survived. It was a miraculous event of God's intervention in his life. And then we see the king respond, and I'm not going to read that for you here in 26 and 27, but the king's response, and even before he pulls Daniel out, he calls him the living God. There is a response to Darius because of what Daniel has done that gives praise to God. And we see that again in verses 26 and 27, Darius' response, Darius' reaction to Daniel's God because of who Daniel is and the things that he's done. And so to kind of wrap it all up this morning, I just want to close with three quick things, three essential things and important things that we see in Daniel's life that I think I want for myself, and I guess I pray that you guys want for you guys yourselves as well. And the first one is the most essential thing that we see throughout the story is that Daniel always was faithful, that Daniel always continued to pray, that Daniel continued to walk with the Lord, that he continued to walk with God. We saw that in the way he avoided the food sacrifice to idols. We saw that in the way that he pleads with God to spare him and his friends. And we see that in the way he trusted God to continue, that trusted God enough that he will continue to pray openly, even though he knew the threat of the lion's den was there. And so we see him, his prayer, and again, that prayer is so essential. And again, it shouldn't be number 10 on my list. It shouldn't be, you know, number 50 on my list. It should be the first thing that I go to. And it unfortunately often is not. But seeking God, walking with the Lord, that prayer that falls in line with it. The second thing we see in Daniel is his relationship to those around him. And I think that's such an important part of his story that I think we kind of gloss over. Because he had a good relationship with the people that in the first story. He didn't go and demand something from them. He didn't, throw a pity party. He didn't, like I said, I don't know why I think he should throw their food across the room, but, he didn't throw the food across the room. He pleaded, or he didn't plead, he just requested, is there a way to do this differently? Let's try something different. And then we also see that he sought peaceful ways to resolve the problem with him being a part of the magicians and the different sorcerers that were going to be killed. He pled with God, and then he brought that to the king. And then lastly, we see just this amazing relationship that he had with King Darius. And King Darius was just so distraught because of what was going to happen to Daniel and the reaction that Daniel had. But I think what's also so cool about this is that Daniel was willing to do what he needed to do where he was at. Right? He was willing to do what he needed to do where he was at. Okay, how many of us... and you don't have to raise your hand. How many of us, we live in the past, right? Oh, 10 years ago was better. 50 years ago, this world, this nation, everything, it was better, smoother, easier. And some of us say it was better back then. But some of us also think, okay, no, when I retire and things settle down and the kids are gone and all this other, we think that'll be better. It'll be great then. Or when I was a kid, when I graduate, when I can get a car, when I get on my own, we live a lot of times in either extreme. We don't a lot of times say, what can I do now that is walking with the Lord that I can serve in the context I am? And we think about that maybe even too socially or relationally or even locationally, geographically. Think, oh, if I was in a big city, it'd be better. If I was in, a smaller town, I don't know if we get a whole lot smaller, but if I was in a smaller town, I'd be better. We can, and I've been there. But, just think, if I was in a different location, I'd be better. And we think, if we just don't find, I am here now, this is where God has placed me, what can I do with that? And the last thing we see from Daniel is his excellent work. And I think sometimes we forget that that's just such an important part of what we do, is not just serving God, which is so important, not just going through and doing the things that God has asked us to do, but to do them excellently, to do things well. And when we think about that and we think about the excellent work, we look at the stories. In every single one of those three stories, we see the response of people around him. And a lot of times it was for Daniel. It started with looking at Daniel. Well, Daniel did this, and so we give him recognition. But then it transferred from Daniel to God. And I guess that's what I want for myself, that if people say, you did an awesome job, that was great, and I like to hear that, in balance, right? I don't need to get a big head either, but we all love to hear that, right, that affirmation, but I want it to be not just about me, but how can that point to God? What has he done because of the things that he's worked and done through me? We see that in chapter 1, verse 20, where the king found Daniel and his friends 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters in the kingdom. In chapter 2, verse 47, the king looked at Daniel and said, and praised God, God is the God of gods and the Lord of kings. And in chapter 6, verse 28, we see that Daniel prospered during the reign of King Darius and then into the reign of King Cyrus the Persian. And so the praise and the wonders that go into that as well. And so it all comes down to, though, it all comes down to how we relate to God. It all comes down to that prayer. And being willing to stay, instead of trying this, you know, oh, this is a good idea, I'm going to try to do this to fix my problem. Instead of trying to do this and fix my problem, I'm just going to pray. Not just pray. I'm going to pray diligently, to pray for mercy, to pray for God to work in my life. And it reminded me, and I think I've used this story before, but I just love the imagery of a group in Africa. The first Christian converts in Africa were adamant about their prayer. In fact, they prayed so much, and they had these special ways of getting to kind of their prayer place, and each person kind of took the same path every day, that they wore the grass and everything out in the bush that they would walk through. And so you could see, based upon how well-worn the path was, how well the person was about diligent about going out and being in prayer. And over time, they kind of developed this mentality, or developed this culture, where they would encourage one another or challenge one another, even plead with one another, and lovingly warn each other when they could see at the path and say, you know, your path looks a little less worn today, right? Instead of it being a smooth, nice path, it's got some growth growing in it. And I look at my life, and I want to have a well-worn path. I want it to be nice and smooth, where there is nothing that's growing, because I am so diligent about going and praying. And that's my prayer for you guys as well, that we will have prayer be such an important part of our lives, that our path to our prayer location, our spot, or whatever it is well-worn. Let's pray. Gracious Father, we thank you for Daniel. We thank you for the life he lived. We thank you for the things that he was willing and able to do. But we just pray, thank you so much that he just loved you and served you well. We just thank you so much for his example. We also pray for our own sake. Help us to be better prayer warriors. Help us to find that opportunity to stop and just say, I need this help in this, and to start with you, and to just allow things to unfold from there, Lord. And I pray that for myself, and I pray that for all of us this morning. And we pray this all in your Son Jesus' name. Amen. So we're going to have the worship team come forward. Having time for invitation. So we have just an opportunity that if something wants to be said, someone wants to make a declaration, someone wants prayer this morning, or if someone wants to make a decision for the first time to come to a relationship like DJ did this last week as well, and to accept him and to be baptized, we're going to stand. And while we're singing, is an opportunity for you to come forward and participate. Let's stand and sing Nothing But the Blood.